Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
One of the first questions that I usually ask my new clients is, why did you get married? And the answer is almost always, because we were in love. And, you know, if you've listened to the show, you know I'm a big fan of love, but I'm also reminded of the line from the movie The Princess Bride. You keep using that word. I do not think it means what you think it means. Most of us are thinking about romantic love, and we equate it with unconditional love. But I got to ask, how many of us truly, truly love our partners unconditionally? And what would this even look like if we did? So to help answer this and other questions about love, I'm joined by Darren Pierre, author of The Invitation to Love, Recognizing the Gift Despite Pain, Fear, and Resistance. And by the way, I love the subtitle of the book. So Darren, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm so happy to be with you.
So, yeah, this is a really interesting title. I mean, I like The Invitation to Love, and it makes it sound like we have a choice, but you also write that love is a calling beyond our control. So is it an invitation? Is it a calling? What does this mean?
Oh, my goodness, such a great question. And the other day I was watching this incredible documentary on Tony Robbins. I think it's called I'm Not a Guru, I think is the name of the documentary. And in the first segment, he is having conversation with this young woman. She was around 19 years old, and she was talking about her father. Her father abused drugs and alcohol when she was younger, and just those things kept him from being effective as a parent. And so she was talking about the resentment she had towards her father, and she said that she hated her father. And so then what Tony Robbins did was he corrected her, and he said, I'm sorry, do you hate your father, or do you hate the fact that you love your father?
Oh, interesting question.
Yes. And she took a deep breath, and she said it's the latter. And what I love about that is this: the truth. Love is a calling beyond her control. If she had full control over it, that hate would have been it. But the hate was just a mask for the love that's really there for her. She loves her father deeply. So when she was talking to Tony about all the things that were disruptive in her growing up and her childhood as it relates to her father, he said, you also need to recognize that those things have given you resilience. They've given you determination. They've given you the courage to stand up in this room full of 2,500 people and share authentically about your love for your father, but how that love has been hard to always express because of the ways he showed up. And so then he said, you need to go call him after we're done with this conversation. And you need to share with him the areas where you give him responsibility, but do it from the twofold place. I hold you responsible for the pain that I feel around how I wanted your acceptance and I felt like I didn't get it because of your relationship with drugs and alcohol. And also say, I also give you and honor you for the experiences you gave me that have given me drive, determination, and ability to love deeper than I ever knew possible.
But this is really an interesting concept because, you know, a lot of people think that hate is the opposite of love, and it really isn't. The opposite of love is actually apathy, you know, that I just don't care about you anymore. There's just no emotional connection to you. But if you're like you're describing what Tony Robbins said, that hate actually is an emotion. It's a very strong emotion, and you can't have that emotion if you don't care.
Agreed. Absolutely. And for her, love was a calling. And then the second piece was when he invited her to be in communication with her father. That was the invitation. That was the invitation for her in that moment. The invitation to love was to go one step further than acknowledging it and actually being in communication with her father. And it was so powerful at the end of the documentary, not to ruin things for your viewers who may watch it. He died 6 months later. And they had been in conversation every week leading up to his death. And his death was abrupt and sudden. And she shares about how she was so happy that she accepted that opportunity that Tony gave her to be in communication with her father, because those last 6 months that they had were the best 6 months she ever had with her father. So the love was something that she couldn't control. And you're exactly right. It's not the opposite hate. Apathy is. And then the invitation to love for her was her having the courage to move beyond fear, to move beyond the pain, to be in communication with her father, to have an open, authentic conversation with him.
Well, and that's really important, because had he died without her being able to reestablish that connection, that would have haunted her the rest of her life. But it's very difficult. I mean, and this is the thing that, I mean, I had a client years ago, and she comes in and I said, okay, what is it that you would like to get by working with me? And she said, well, I want it so that my husband never ever hurts me again. And I'm going, okay, we're done, because I can guarantee you that if you love him, he is going to hurt you. Now, I don't mean that he would do it on purpose. I mean, that's a whole different question. I said, but you know, when we open ourselves up to love, we actually do open ourselves up to the pain of whatever that other person is doing, whether it's our partner or our child or our parent. And, you know, we get this idea that we can somehow protect ourselves from that pain, but you really can't, can you? Not if you're going to love.
Exactly. I mean, it is the byproduct of our humanity. We come in with all the experiences, good and bad, of our past. And so we honor where love is at its purest form, which is joy, which is bliss, which is deep, authentic connection. But at the same time, people come with the scar tissue of past relationships. Their parents, who may have had the best of intentions but didn't always show up as well as they could for their children. And so absolutely, in the invitation to love others, we also got to accept that that's going to come with moments where people in their humanity don't show up as well as we like them to. And that can sometimes be painful.
And then it's how we deal with that that really is going to determine the overall health and success of our relationships.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's this great quote that says, you know, if you speak to a person as you see them to be in the future, that is who they will become. And so many times in the moment when we're feeling that pain, when we're feeling that angst, we want to lash out and we want to speak to the ineffectiveness that they are having. But that just exacerbates the shame and guilt or whatever that's already there for them. And so the challenge is how do I love myself enough in that moment to either distance myself and say, I need distance because this isn't really a healthy space, or say, communicate to them in their truth and not in the ineffectiveness that you're seeing.
Absolutely. And so when you talk about the invitation to love, you also connect it to commitment. So how do you see this invitation to love being in partnership with commitment? How does that work?
Yeah, if I go back to that same example that I use of the young woman with her father, the invitation to love being a commitment was her picking up the phone. You could feel all the resistance she had in that moment. She was like, I'm done with my father. I'm done with him. I've looked for his acceptance my whole life. I'm not picking up the phone. The fear of failure. What if I pick up the phone and he rejects me? All that was coming through. And, you know, at that moment, she had to say, no, I am committed to this relationship. I am committed to this, and I'm going to do this piece that I need to do, not only for my father, but more importantly for myself. And so I believe that's where the commitment comes in. I think the commitment comes in even when we leave a relationship. Our loving release of someone else is a commitment. So each time we love someone, it is directly correlated to commitment.
That's really interesting, because I talk to my clients a lot about, did they have any idea when they stood up on their wedding day and made those vows what they were committing to? And most people, you know, like in the opening where I was talking about, I love that line from The Princess Bride, and of course, you know, the line is about the word inconceivable, not love, but we have this idea of what love is, and you know, you stand up there and you promise to love, honor, and cherish, and how do each people define those, and what is the commitment? Because usually it's until death, which always isn't the case, and sometimes it shouldn't be. But it is this commitment. It's this choice on a daily basis to choose to connect, to choose, as you call, the invitation to love, to choose to love a less than perfect person.
Absolutely. And it happens with our partners, our spouses, and our children. You know, I think about, I'm an uncle to two lovely nephews and a niece. And my nephew, Micah, I talk about him in my book. And I shared about, in my book, about love as a commitment. And I'm committed to being a loving uncle to my niece and my two nephews, experiencing them with patience and unconditional love. And sometimes Micah, at the ripe old age of 3 at the time, his main means of communication was a scream and a cry. Mm-hmm. And Uncle Darren, after 5 minutes of that, I have reached saturation. So for me, in a committed relationship with my nephew, I have to leave the room. Mm-hmm. I have to say, Micah, I have assessed the situation. Your tears right now are out of angst and not out of anything that I have the control to fix. So I need to remove myself, reclaim my patience, and come back to you when we're both able to be in communication and connection with one another. My commitment is just as strong when I leave the room as when I entered. And sometimes we don't think about it, and you take that to the next level with partnerships. Sometimes we have to assess our own ability and capacity to be in space with someone else. And we think that to leave the relationship, or when I left the room with Micah, is, oh, I'm no longer committed. No, I am just as committed to loving you. It's just the way I need to love you in this moment is to give us distance and space. Because if I stay in there for 15, 20 minutes thinking this is the way I'm showing my nephew love, by that point, I'm agitated and he's agitated and I lash out and I'm no longer the loving, patient uncle that I claim myself to be.
And I love that, because that's actually what I try to teach some of my clients. And I've gotten into this idea of using an internal scale of, you know, where am I in the moment, from 0, you know, from 1, which is I'm perfectly calm, everything's great, I'm in control, I'm feeling good, to 10, somebody's going out the second story window and I don't know who it is. And just to play with that, to see where am I at any given moment. And I always tell my clients, it's like, do not begin a difficult conversation with your partner if you're higher than a 3. And if you start going over a 6, you got to take a time out, because, mm-hmm. for exactly this reason, because we just escalate. But people think, well, if I walk away, then somehow that's a horrible thing. And I also tell, well, yes, if you walk away, you have to come back. I mean, you can't just not talk about whatever that topic is. But then it's to go away, and like you talk about with your nephew, figure out what it was about that interaction that was so difficult for me, and what got me so out of control, so that I'm learning. And that's part of the commitment process, I think, is to continue to stay connected, but also to continue to learn. Is that accurate? I mean, does that sound?
Absolutely. Right? I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more.
So how do you recommend that people make this commitment? I mean, because you're very conscious about it, and I try to get my clients to be conscious about what they're doing. But is there anything that you can recommend to help people be in that consciousness, conscious place, and recognize that whatever's going on is not necessarily anything? I mean, they have choices about it, but they can't control the other person.
You can't. And so I always say to people, I think one of the things you would want to do is you would want to ask yourself, if you're in a partnered relationship, or even if you're not, think about your partner of the future. And if they had to describe their partner, would it be you? And so as I think about myself in relationship with my nephews, I said that I want my nephews to think of their Uncle Darren as loving, unconditionally loving, and patient. That is my intention in that relationship. And so I go in, and so if Uncle Darren's plunked off the earth and my nephew Micah's asked about me, that is how I want to be described. And whenever I find that being put in a vulnerable place, I need to sit back and reassess. for someone else, when they think about their partner of the future, their current partner, they want to say, maybe they want to say that they're driven, they're independent, they're financially stable, and they're unconditionally loving. Well, then you need to ask yourself, are you all those things right now? And or are you working towards those things? Because we'll never hit this perfection. But if those are values that you want your partner to say about you in the future, then are you working towards those now? And that's really hard, and it's much easier said than done, because it's so much easier for us to distract ourselves to think about how we fix our partner or how we change our partner, then how do we enhance and celebrate those things within us? It's so much easier for me in that moment when Mike is crying to be distracted and just focus all my energy on getting him to quiet down instead of sitting with my own self and saying, Darren, how is this teaching me to be more patient? How am I exercising this unconditional love that I talk about? It's so much easier to look at the other. And so I think the first exercise you need to do is write down who you are as a partner for someone else.
That's what
you want to be said about you. And then figure out if you're getting about the business of doing those things.
That sounds like a great idea. This is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on WebTalkRadio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm having a deep discussion about what love really is and how you can discover it with author Darren Pierre. And if you want to recapture the love and commitment of your relationship, then I invite you to give me a call or shoot me an email and take advantage of my free, no obligation, Create Your Happily Ever After breakthrough session. And you can reach me at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at Foundations Coaching NC, that's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, Coaching NC, as in North Carolina, .com. Or you can reach me by phone at 919-924-0463. Now back to this wonderful conversation. So right before the break, you were talking about taking a step back and looking at what you want in a partner and then figuring out, are you actually doing those things? So you also, and so this brings in the next question that I want to talk about, was that you write about watching how others express love towards themselves to kind of gauge how they will be able to express their love for you. And why is this so critical?
Oh my goodness, it's so profoundly critical because they're in direct correlation. So a couple of years ago, I watched this interview that Whitney Houston did with Oprah Winfrey. And in the interview, she talked about her, at that time, ex-husband Bobby Brown's infidelity.
Right.
She shared about how, you know, he was not faithful to her, and about how she always kept her vows in the marriage. She never stepped outside of the marriage. The only thing she did was drugs. And I'm like, Whitney, that is it. That is it. That is stepping out of the marriage. Because, again, going back to what we talked about before the break, if she really was honest with herself about what she want her husband or partner of the future to be with in a partner, she would never want them to be with someone who struggled and continued to engage in drug abuse. That's not something that she would want for them. And so she, in her expression of love to herself, or not expressing love to herself by continuing to engage in drugs, was in direct correlation with her ability to show up as she would want to show up as the best version of herself for her husband. And so people's ability to express love for themselves is going to give you so much of an indication of how they're going to fully be able to express love to you.
That's a really interesting position, because when people think about infidelity, they think about somebody having a sexual or physical interaction with somebody else. But you could be, like you said, you could be unfaithful in other ways. She was not fully present in the marriage because she had a drug addiction. And so there was a third entity in that marriage before he ever stepped out. And it's really interesting, because there's so many people who think, well, I'll be the one to change that person. I'll just love them enough so that they will stop, you know, being the bad boy or having the issue with drugs or, you know, cheating or whatever. And this is just, I mean, I look at, it's like, that's delusional.
Yeah.
And how do we get people to see this as critically important? Because I'll ask my clients, it's like, are you in love with the flesh and blood, flawed human being that is standing in front of you? Or are you in love with some idealized version that you think they can become?
Absolutely. And, you know, Marianne Williamson says it best, as we do our own work to love ourselves, in relationship to another person, one or two things will happen. Either they will begin to do their own work or we won't care anymore. And I think so many times when we get so passionate about throwing our love to someone else so that they will change, we do that at the expense and the abandonment of ourselves.
Well, and it's interesting because there's a colleague of mine, Michelle Wiener Davis, the very first time I ever met her, which was eons ago, she actually was doing a seminar called It Takes One to Tango. And it was about focusing on yourself and the relationship, doing the kinds of things that you want to see in the relationship. And then by definition, the relationship is going to have to change. Now, whether that means it grows or it dies, but it can't stay in that place, because if I'm now doing things differently and I refuse to go back into the old pattern, then you will either stay with me and grow with me, or you'll go, yeah, no, done, don't want any part of this, and then the relationship ends. So it's very, and it's one of the things I talk about and a lot of my guests talk about, is this emphasis on pulling ourselves up a notch. Trying to be the people, the partners, or the people that we want to be, instead of looking to the other person going, okay, if you would just fix that person, everything will be okay.
I couldn't agree more. And that's a powerful place. I've heard from so many people who went to therapy and they were like, I went into therapy because my marriage wasn't working and I went in with the intention of it getting fixed and we wound up getting divorced. And I'm like, because that person wasn't growing with you. And that person, you embarked on a new journey to be a better version of yourself, to really continue to enhance yourself, and your partner just wasn't in that space with you. And that would be the same as if two people came together in the common connection of addiction, be it just drugs, alcohol, whatever it may be, and one person decides to move on the pathway to healing and rectifying and responding to those things. If the other person does not do that, then there's going to eventually be growth apart. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just an acknowledgement that the growth that you're experiencing, if the other person doesn't have the same value to respond in that same growth dimension as you, the relationship inevitably is to take a turn.
Well, and I do also have to point out that when an individual starts doing their own growth work, it's not, you can't go back to your partner and go, okay, well, I'm doing this, so you need to do X. It's like, no, you can't. That doesn't work either. But it really is about being clear about who you are, who you want to be, the boundaries that you want to set, because that's the other thing that I think gets in people's way, is they don't understand, like you did, like you so beautifully described with your nephew, you actually set a boundary saying, you know, I can't be present with your tears of anxiety because there's nothing I can do with this, so I'm going to remove myself, not permanently, just temporarily until I can get myself under control. And people don't see the boundaries as being, you know, a way of helping the relationship. It's not, you're not putting barriers to the relationship. You're saying this behavior is okay, this other behavior is not okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because the first relationship we have is with ourselves. And so, you know, when people engage in relationship with me, one of the things that is a criteria for me is that the relationship be open and be honest and it be authentic. And if that's not something that you can hold space for, then I absolutely respect you declining the invitation to be in relationship with me. And that's the same thing that we all need to be doing. It's just saying, these are the things that are for me. These are the values that I hold, and these are where I need to be. And either people are going to rise to the occasion to meet you there, or they're going to have to step back. And sometimes it may be a step back, which doesn't necessarily mean it's forever. It just means it's a step back, and they will need their time to reassess.
Well, and it's so critical. You know, I talk about it, you this is the ante to get into my poker game, you know, into my relationship poker game. It's like, if you're willing to step up and be this way, then great. You and I are going to get along great. But if you can't, that's okay too. But then we can't be in relationship with each other. And, you know, I think that that's one of the things where you're talking about commitment and you're talking about getting clarity about who we want in our lives. So, you know, what other ways do we get in our own way when we're searching for love?
One of the ways that we get in our own way in searching for love is allowing anger to dictate our decisions. I am one of those people who tries earnestly not to make decisions or be in communication when I am in the space of anger. Because once you give birth to words, they are alive forever and forever and forever. And so it's like, I want to be in a relationship with you, Leslie. I want to be in a relationship with you. I want us to have this amazing friendship. You do something wrong to me, and in my haste of anger, I call and I just yell and I scream and I say things that normally I wouldn't say, but in the heat of the moment and the anger, I'm saying. And so now what I'm doing is I'm doing something that's counter to what the relationship is I'm trying to build with you. So when I allow that anger to move through, and I'm now able to be back in communication with you, I need to be honest with you about, Leslie, this didn't land for me. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you about how I was feeling. I was angry. I was this. I was that. And this is how I experienced that. And this didn't work for me. I'm in a much stronger, more powerful place to continue to cultivate that relationship with you than if I would have called you out of haste and anger. And so if we want to think about one of the biggest ways we get in our own way is anger. And then the second one is fear. Mm-hmm. I will hear people say so many times about how they want to be in relationship with whoever. I was talking to someone. He hadn't talked to his daughter in 7 years.
Wow.
And I said, you need to call her. And he was like, oh, I can't call her. I'm so afraid. I said, here's the thing. I said, if you leave the earth tomorrow, what she will say is that for the last 7 years, my father has not tried to call me one time. And if you can be at peace with that, then don't call. But if that doesn't, if me saying that doesn't sit well with you, then you need to do something different.
Well, and I love that, because this is where you see the dance, especially in couples, where it changes. I always was trying to figure out what the dynamic was, because in the beginning of a relationship, it's all about figuring out what can I do that my partner will enjoy, you know, what kind of gift can I buy them, what kind of date can I arrange, and then suddenly it turns into, well, what have you done for me lately? And I'm going, how does that develop? And part of this, I think, is that ability to continue to reach out, to continue to open the door. It's what I tell people. I said, you know, I was talking to somebody who's about their kids going to college. And when my son went to college, he's not the greatest communicator. He was a typical, you know, teenage boy. And so I would, you know, see him pop up on the computer and I would just, you know, hey, dude, how's it going? And sometimes I'd get absolutely no response. Sometimes I would get monosyllabic responses. And then sometimes I'd have a 20-minute conversation with him. And it was just opening the door to let him come through. And, you know, and people get tired. I get couples who say, well, how long do I have to do this? How long do I have to continue to reach out to my partner? And it's kind of like, until. But, you know, it's hard, though, when you reach out and you don't get anything back. I think that's where the fear comes from.
I would agree. And the beauty is this. So I have another friend. She was in the same space with her father. But her father was on the other end. He was communicating constantly, and she just wasn't ready to be in communication with him. Her parents had a contentious divorce, and I think that she had some scar tissue from their separation.
Sure.
And she just wasn't ready to be in communication. So one day she called me. She's like, Darren, I'm just so frustrated. He texts me every day, yada, yada. And I said to her, I said, what you need to do is you need to tell him that the way he can show you love is to give you distance.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, oh, I don't need to tell him that. I was like, yes, you do, because what he's continually trying to do, he's in a desperate need to connect with you. Uh-huh. And he doesn't know how. So he texts you every day. You never respond, but you never give him the love he needs, which is to tell him what he needs to do. And then the beauty is this. If he doesn't honor your request, then you can block him, do whatever you need to, but you have not given him the tools to love you effectively. So she did that. And they didn't talk for 2 months. And then after 2 months, she reached out to him because her love tank was back full again because he had actually stopped doing what he was doing before. And so I think sometimes we think, oh, my goodness, you know, I keep on reaching out. I keep on reaching out. They're not responding to me. Sometimes you're just planting the seed for a plant that will grow later down the road. And so what you can do in those moments, if you know, if you're in a place where it's not that the person just isn't a good communicator like your son, but if you're in a place where there's been distance in the relationship, you can just ask them directly. Hey, do you mind me being in communication with you? Is this bothering you? Yada, yada, yada. And they may be like, no, I just need some distance. And then you'll be like, okay, well, I'm going to continue to reach out periodically just to let you know that I'm thinking about you.
Right. And I think that's critical. And to be able to be enough in communication with somebody where you can share what your needs are. And I think that's really, you know, kind of... I could talk to you for hours about this, but you know, I think it's really critically important that people really understand how to communicate and share what they really need with their partners or their parents or their children, because you know, people get frantic. They don't know how to reach people. And if somebody says, hey, you know, I'll give you a call every Sunday or whatever it is, then everybody can take a step back and take a deep breath and relax.
Absolutely.
So, Darren, can you please tell people where they can find your absolutely wonderful book?
Yes. So they can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble online. They can go to my website, www.theinvitationtolove.com, and you can see the local retailers that you can buy it online. And so if you go to somewhere like Amazon, you can put in The Invitation to Love, and it will come up there. It's available on Kindle. It's also available in e-reader form for Nook and the iPad. So if you go to the Apple iBook store, you can also find it there, too.
Okay. So this has been fantastic. But, guys, you have to understand, if you open yourself to loving someone, you are accepting that you can and will be hurt. It's impossible to truly love from a place of fear and self-protection. Because, guys, this is the essence of vulnerability and the key to real intimacy. It takes courage to step into this space. But, guys, if you can do it, the payoff is absolutely amazing. So, the question is, what would help you be brave? So keep listening and learning about how you can have wonderful relationships. And until next week, stay loving.